welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elvey.
And I'm Ken Rudin. And Ron, I'm tired of you apologizing for our podcast.
Yes, well, I think you should just wait and find out exactly what this podcast is going to destroy before you begin to apologize for it.
Do you think that advice would have been well heeded by one of the presidential candidates? And I'm not talking about Gary Johnson.
Let's be careful, because I think that this entire flare-up in the Middle East, and we're defining the Middle East extremely broadly here because it's across the entire Islamic world.
And it's still going on as we're talking.
And as we're talking here on Thursday morning, it is clearly still a developing story. Let's be careful before we decide which of the presidential candidates is going to be more burned by this in the long run.
Good point.
Mitt Romney, in the short run, in the very short run, saw the political potential in characterizing all this as a demonstration of the weakness of the Obama administration on foreign policy, and particularly, I think, on this, you know, murky sort of issue about sympathy for the Islamic world. And so he jumped on it very early on Tuesday before they knew who exactly had been killed in Benghazi or how many American officials had been killed in Benghazi. And that has turned into a bit of a firestorm in and of itself off to one side, distracting from what the larger issue could have been, an issue that could have helped and may still help the Romney-Ryan campaign.
But before we go that far, Mitt Romney had been under tremendous, unrelenting pressure from the right, from his supporters, from the conservatives out there who said, look, you're just too soft on President Obama. You've got to stand up. You've got to make it personal. I think the day before this statement, Sarah Palin was on Fox News, and I was watching it, saying that, you know, you got to just basically bring him down. It has to be personal. That's the only way you're going to win. And he was under tremendous pressure from the, not the, I'm not excusing or defending anything he said, but clearly he knew that his campaign was not doing well, certainly on the days after the convention. The numbers didn't look especially good, especially in states like Ohio. He knew he had to do something. And in fairness, as the Republican nominee for president, he should have something to say, but not as it's happening, not until he has all the information at his hands. And he clearly didn't.
That's right. All of that is right. And I do think a lot of the members of his staff and a lot of the people around him and the people who are advising them and the people who are in the conservative blog world feel this enormous need to, you know, slap the candidate back and forth across the face and get him awakened and get him out there doing something differently, because they thought they'd had a pretty great convention in Tampa. They didn't hear anything that they found particularly impressive in Charlotte. And so they're stunned to see what had been essentially a tied race in virtually every poll turn into a 3, 4, 5, even 6 and 7 point lead for Obama in most polls. Now, not all. And the Rasmussen tracking poll, which had run out to 5 for the president, is now back to 1 for Romney, and that'll probably change again tomorrow. But the consensus of polls seems to be that as we get into mid-September, the president is beginning to edge ahead, and that's a panic button moment for too many people on the Republican side, maybe not Mitt Romney personally, but all the people around him.
And as you mentioned, there are some subtexts, some sub-stories out there that could very well be to Mitt Romney's advantage. For example, the lack of clarity regarding President Obama's foreign policy position in Egypt regarding the Arab Spring. What is his policy towards the Muslim Brotherhood? If we're giving Egypt $2 billion a year, President Morsi, where was his act of outrage over the violence?
What are we talking about? What exactly was the problem with what Mitt Romney did? On Tuesday night, he came out with a statement about what the administration should or shouldn't have done and might have said and didn't say.
Basically, based on a memorandum that the U.S. Embassy in Cairo released regarding the anti-Muslim film.
But before the protest.
Exactly, before any of the violence.
Certainly before the violence.
Right.
And a lot of people expected that on Wednesday morning, Romney would come out and say, well, I said that stuff last night before I had all the facts. Instead, he said this.
The administration was wrong to stand by a statement sympathizing with those who had breached our embassy in Egypt instead of condemning their actions. It's never too early for the United States government to condemn attacks on Americans and to defend our values. The White House distanced itself last night from the statement, saying it wasn't cleared by Washington. And that reflects the mixed signals they're sending to the world.
Yeah, the operative phrase here, it's never too early to jump on the other guy or never too early to criticize the administration.
And this was a CYA move, of course. I mean, he could have said, oops, I made a mistake, but Romney is not about to do that. And I think he said, look, I've got to justify my earlier comments, and this was my justification.
You can hear the argument taking place among his aides. There surely were people within his operation who were saying, oh, no, we better you know, cut our losses here. And then other people saying, no, let's double down, as the expression goes. This, of course, had to contrast with the president's own statement in the Rose Garden, also on Wednesday morning.
Since our founding, the United States has been a nation that respects all faiths. We reject all efforts to denigrate the religious beliefs of others. But there is absolutely no justification to this type of senseless violence. None. The world must stand together to unequivocally reject these brutal acts.
Notice how the president did not play politics with this statement. He did not address what Mitt Romney did, although the president's tone did change later in an interview with CBS News.
There's a broader lesson to be learned here. And, Governor Romney seems to have a tendency to shoot first, name later. And as president, one of the things I've learned is you can't do that. It's important for you to make sure that the statements that you make are backed up by the facts and that you've thought through the ramifications before you make them.
This has got to be particularly stinging as a misstep for the Romney campaign, because Mitt Romney's nature is that of a corporate executive. It's that of a reasoned and rational business person who is supposedly looking at all the facts and all the data before he gets out there and shoots from the hip. The other effect that all this has had this week has been to obscure another political problem that had arisen for the president and which could still persist beyond today. It looks as though this strike in Chicago, where the teachers have walked off the job, is going to be resolved in the next so many hours or days, or at least that's what we're hearing in the news on Thursday morning. But, here's another case where the president wants to be on the side of Rahm Emanuel, his former chief of staff, who's the mayor of Chicago and involved in these negotiations. At the same time, he wants the support of the public teachers union, the public employees unions, who were a big part of that convention in Charlotte and who are a big part of his volunteer organizational force in November. So he's very much caught in the middle.
And therefore, he's doing absolutely nothing. He's not... We always talk about Obama's profiles and courage. There is no profile and courage in this one because, as you say, he's torn. It's not so much the loyalty to Rahm Emanuel, but basically the argument of Rahm Emanuel and the city of Chicago is an argument that President Obama himself has been making for a long time. Merit pay for teachers. If the schools are doing well, teachers should be rewarded. And if they're not, the teachers should not be rewarded. So this is the kind of stuff that unions are not happy with. And all the teachers' unions are certainly backing President Obama, but these issues, this philosophy of President Obama, has been gnawing at these teachers for a long time, especially on merit pay for teachers.
And there's still an opportunity there for Mitt Romney to jump in and critique the whole situation, critique the president, and say something like this.
I want our kids to have the skills they need for the jobs of tomorrow, and that means put our kids first and put the teachers' union behind.
And that seems to be the philosophy of both Mitt Romney and his running mate, Paul Ryan, who have said unequivocally they support Rahm Emanuel in his battle with the teachers' unions. Also, going back to one more thing about Paul Ryan, you notice also during the Libyan crisis, Paul Ryan explicitly did not criticize President Obama. He said, this is a sad time for America. We are all one.
About the most political thing Paul Ryan said was, this is a time for leadership.
Yeah.
And, of course, that is an implicit criticism, and it's an implicit statement that that's what Ryan and Romney would offer if they were elected. But he didn't go after the administration in the way that Mitt Romney did. Now, another character who is figuring into this entire drama in ways we had not anticipated a few months ago is the former president of the United States, Bill Clinton. We have seen from polling since the conventions that with the exception of Clint Eastwood, whose performance clearly broke through the cultural curtain and reached virtually all Americans. I mean, everybody heard about what Clint Eastwood did at the Republican convention on that last night, debating the empty chair. But the other speech that seems to have broken through more than any other in 2 weeks was made in Charlotte by former President Bill Clinton, who's now out on the stump for the Obama ticket in Florida.
The president's opponent has said that he robbed Medicare of $716 billion. And they said that against us last time in the elections, and a lot of Republicans got elected to Congress in Florida. peddling that old dog. It's a mangy old dog. It's not true.
You still have to wonder what Bill Clinton could bring to President Obama and his fortunes in November. I well remember President Reagan in the 1980s, very, very popular, campaigning for other candidates and unable to transfer his personality and his popularity to those candidates. But Bill Clinton does remind Democrats of a time when there were not big deficits, when Americans, for the most part, were not dying overseas. And the reception that Bill Clinton got after his speech in Charlotte clearly could only be good news for the Democrats.
That's right. And we made this observation last week that acting as Barack Obama's attorney, almost, like he was in a courtroom and making the case for the Obama administration, making the case for a second term, Bill Clinton was more effective in many ways than he ever was, even when he was arguing for himself or for his wife. In fact, particularly more effective than he was when he was campaigning for his wife in 2008. And by the way, the Clinton combination of Bill out there on the stump, being political Bill again, and Hillary Clinton traveling the world, speaking for the nation, being not political, but being the Secretary of State that any president really would want to have. That's a pretty potent combination. In a sense, the Clintons are not only back, in a sense, the Clintons are more politically potent today than they've ever been.
And we always wonder about what Hillary Clinton is going to do in 2016, if anything. But before 2016, of course, will come this January, and Hillary Clinton is expected to leave the administration, as she says she will. And it's interesting that it seems to be a tryout for the next Secretary of State going on in Washington. John Kerry has been in a lot of places lately. He gave a strong speech, knocking Romney, praising Obama at the Democratic Convention. And in the Libya crisis, he also was very forthright, talking about what Mitt Romney did and what he did wrong. Now, the danger, of course, is the next Secretary of State, whoever he or she will be, must be confirmed by the Senate. And the thought of John Kerry theoretically having an easy confirmation battle because he's one of them, and yet if he spends his whole time attacking Mitt Romney, you wonder if the Republicans will be so nice if and when John Kerry's nomination for Secretary of State goes before the Senate.
Well, we saw just a little over a decade ago when John Ashcroft was a former senator, just having been defeated in the 2000 election. He was nominated to be Attorney General by the new president, George W. Bush, and there were 40-some votes against him in the Senate, most of them coming from people who had served with him for a number of years. So there's real precedent for the Senate turning on one of its
own.
Absolutely.
And go back even further with John Tower in 1989, the former senator from Texas, who was the first President Bush's Secretary of Defense designate, and he was defeated in that Senate.
Outright defeated.
Defeated by for many of the people who worked with him. Well, they had a good case, though, because a lot of the senators didn't like the fact that John Tower was a womanizer and a drinker. And there
and
are
those are things are unheard of
in the Senate.
The Senate would never accept a womanizing drinker.
Exactly. Unlike the podcast.
Speaking of the Senate, some movement in some of these Senate races that has the Democrats feeling a little bit encouraged. Obviously in Missouri, because of the Todd Akin controversy, they're hoping that Claire McCaskill now has a chance of surviving. She's a few points ahead in some polls, although Citizens United, the group that's famous for their lawsuit that led to the famous Supreme Court decision on corporate financing of campaigns, that group paid for a poll in Missouri that shows Todd Akin ahead. Is it conceivable that Todd Akin, despite getting famous for saying legitimate rape, is, could be a United States senator?
Is it possible? Yes. Do I think it's going to happen? Really, no. And what there's so many fascinating things about this race. It seems like all the Democrats are trying to push polls to say that this race is very, very close because obviously they want to keep Todd Akin in the race.
Oh, they don't want him to just drop out.
Which he can do up to September 25th. Now, the Republicans are trying to point out to the fact that we're getting clobbered here. Claire McCaskill, an obvious target. She's so ripe for defeat. And yet we're losing because of Todd Akin's unfortunate remarks about rape and pregnancy. So it's interesting how both sides are just pushing other people's polls as opposed to the regular tactic of saying, our candidate is really, really up.
It's inverted. It's a little bit like Lewis Carroll, a little bit like Through the Looking Glass. There was also a controversy this week about whether Todd Akin was going to appear and speak at the Values Voters Summit here in Washington, D.C., which is sometimes called the Social Conservatives Woodstock.
Yeah, well, see, Claire McCaskill seems to be doing everything right, even though I would argue in the last couple of years she seemed to do everything wrong, especially everything from that plane that she owned was billing out to taxpayers, but Air Claire, they were calling
it. Air Claire.
But here's the thing, though. I mean, she's buying up all the airtime she can get right now. She's painting herself as a moderate, not going on the attack at all. And once
appearing with Obama, not running. Of course, no. Obama's not coming to Missouri because it's not a swing state.
Right.
It's a loss.
But come September 25th, I think then she goes on the assault. And if Aiken doesn't have the money, the NRSC has pulled back all its money. Crossroads is also
that's
pulled
back. That's the Karl Rove group.
Right. They, between the two of them, I think that's $8 million in promised spending that it's not going to happen. Now, look, if the race is close in October, maybe Republican money will come back in. But I think that Republicans are justifiably looking elsewhere because there are other candidates, such as Rick Berg in North Dakota, which was not supposed to be a close race.
That was supposed to be a walkaway.
Yeah, and that's close too. So maybe the Republicans are saying, look, if we're going to get the four seats or the three seats if Romney wins, the four pickups in the Senate that we need to take a control. Let me stop for a second. Nobody's going to control the Senate.
No one's going to control the Senate.
Majority.
But it would be nice to have the chairmanships.
Right,
would be nice to be running the committees, at least. And everyone would like to be the majority party, even though that carries the onus of it appearing as though you should be able to do something, which, of course, no one will be able to do.
But isn't that funny? I mean, we're talking about, like, who's going to control the Senate? We're talking about Virginia with Kane and Allen. We're talking about Missouri. We're talking about North Dakota, Nevada, Wisconsin, which Tommy Thompson seems to be up a little bit.
Tommy Thompson will win in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a huge question about there. But the Republicans need more than three or four seats because they have to figure Maine is gone. Angus King will win in Maine.
Right.
He's an independent, but I don't think anybody expects him to caucus with the Republicans.
Absolutely correct.
So, and he'll probably be at least as good a Democrat as Joe Lieberman, who is the independent who's leaving this year. So,
and speaking of Connecticut, what is
going
on there?
How about that? Yeah, Linda McMahon is ahead. Look, we don't know. It's a blue state. It's one where Obama should win easily. Chris Murphy is the Democratic nominee. He seems to have the support of everyone in the party. It's not like as though there's some kind of big rebellion against him. But they're holding their fire there. They're keeping their powder dry. They're waiting till late. And meanwhile, Linda McMahon, who is, of course, you know, the nominee from last time around, who wasn't...
Right. She spent $50 million of her own money, still lost by 12 points to Richard Blumenthal in a big Republican year.
Yeah, but Richard Blumenthal was really well known in the state. Not necessarily all positive.
True.
There was the Vietnam, you know, phony record and referring to being a Vietnam veteran when he had served during the period but never gone to Vietnam. There were positives and negatives there. How does he win by 12 points over her, and then she's ahead of Chris Murphy, who doesn't seem to be controversial?
Well, I mean, the only controversy is whether Chris Murphy either failed to pay rent or defaulted on a house. I kind of think it's a little much ado about nothing, and I ultimately think that Chris Murphy wins. But the fact is, with 50-some-odd days to go, that's another Senate seat that was not supposed to be in play, and it has become one.
That's right. And there are a number of other races. So it's conceivable you could see a huge landslide here for Republicans, and they could wind up with plenty of seats in the Senate to be the majority party and still not really be able to run the show because you need 60 votes to cut off debate in the Senate, and that is such a rare bird. We don't really expect to see it again in our lifetime.
Going back to the presidential race, we have no idea how long this controversy over Mitt Romney's comments will last or whether the conversation will, as you say, go back to Obama's stewardship of foreign policy. But I guess the next big turning point in the campaign is October 3rd and the beginning of the presidential debates.
That's right. And we have three debates, one of which is supposed to be devoted entirely to foreign policy. And then a well-watched, I predict, debate between Joe Biden and Paul Ryan. And while usually the vice president doesn't mean that much to the choice of the president, and no matter how much fuss gets made over the candidate, look at Sarah Palin, in the end, that doesn't really seem to be what people vote on. Still, this is going to be a lively sideshow. And before we go, are we finally done with the primaries this year, Ken?
Well, except for Louisiana, which always holds its primary on election day.
We should probably not talk about Louisiana.
No. How's about you? No, but anyway, but the one thing to mention, though, in this week's New Hampshire primary is that, of course, Governor John Lynch, the Democrat, is retiring, and the two parties have come up with nominees to be the next governor. But the interesting thing is that two women were nominated for Congress to run against the incumbent Republican Congressman Charlie Bass and Frank Ginta. And if both women win, which is a possibility, I don't think it's going to happen.
It's not likely, but it's possible.
A possibility. It'll be for the first time in history that a state, New Hampshire, will have an all female congressional delegation, because Jean Shaheen and Kelly Ayotte and the senators, and perhaps two women in the House as well. Never happened before.
So that's never happened in any state ever before?
That is correct.
And that's amazing.
And that's it.
For this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week, won't you, for It's All Politics from NPR. Who won the world?